Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Did Dan get to hear Tom Delmonico?
Says who?
Oh, Dan was off.
Yes. So, Dan, we had, I'm glad to have you back.
Thank you.
We had it's a show where we, Adam and Lindsay, tracked down Tom Delmonico to report in the X Games, and it just kind of went sour. I mean, right? I mean, Adam, out of nowhere, he just started ripping the event.
Tom is like an old school
guy.
Yeah. Hard scrabbled, is that the word I'm thinking of? Hard scrabbled?
I think it is, but I'm not sure, but I like it.
No. Let's back this train up for a second, because I said this on Friday. I had nothing to do with the booking of Tom Delmonico.
Oh, I liked it. Oh, okay. I was trying to include you in the credit.
Oh, was it? What was the reference to the women's bottom? The caboose?
Caboose. You referred to
a competitor's
caboose.
I'm not taking any lay of claim in this.
What could he have said? What term could he have used where you would
have... He could have just not talked about it.
Oh, well.
I mean...
He's an observationalist, right? Adam, he's assessing the scene.
Well, let's just go back for a second, because Adam was I'll give him credit. He was trying to be helpful. I had to do two shows on Friday, so I was incredibly busy.
Right.
A lot was going on. We had a lot of breaking news. So it was, we had Evander Holyfield in, and we had a comedian.
You should have seen it. You should have seen Adam groveling, Dan, to get a picture with the real deal.
Well, then we had Dan Soder, who was a
heavyweight champ. I wouldn't blame him.
And your father, you know, of course, comes right in the middle of that.
That was fantastic.
That video?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah, I saw it. Okay, I saw it. Why was he here?
Because he needed me to put his audio in for the Sunday show.
Oh, okay.
So it was busy. So Adam was being generous. Yeah. He came in. He said, you know, what do we need filled?
Hold on a second. Can we just circle back for a second? Adam was being what?
Generous.
Oh.
No, I was actually filling the show since she was dedicated to the John Hines experience.
There we go.
So the only thing that needed to be filled was 12:35. And I said, what do you want to talk about? You know, we had a great guest on talking about comedy. We had some stuff about beer. So it was like right in his wheelhouse. And I was we'll see if we can find someone covering the X Games. And I left it up to him.
Oh. Let's see if we can come
on. That was Adam?
Yeah.
Hi, everybody. Todd Carter, Mickey Mouse.
What voice? Wasn't that a voice we came? That's a voice I came up with for Backtrack Guy or something.
That's right.
Makes no sense.
It was going to capture the imagination.
Okay, hold on. I'm backing up.
And so he was from where? The Access Networks or something?
Access Networks of the U.S.
Oh, yes. I enjoyed it. You sent it to me later. I heard part of it when you were recounting Angela Merkel and Lindsay's dream. I enjoyed that too. But yeah, Dan, it's worth checking out. WCCO.com/Chad. Did you enjoy your couple days away from us? And were there any big plans?
No big plans.
Yep.
Yes, I did enjoy my time away.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
Did you think of us at all?
When you texted me a happy birthday, that was the limit of what I thought.
Okay.
But I appreciated that.
How
nice
about story. Adam's cheap shot at you? What did you think of that?
I didn't hear any, Adam.
Oh, well, let's just read, because Lindsay was very kind and talked about what a good person you are.
It was a very
Then Lindsay's tweet, absolutely.
Yeah, and then Adam said,
hey, thank you very much for that.
Why don't you lay off the early morning drinking? Instead of like, you know.
But I had the wink emoji to, you know, let everybody know it's all good.
Oh, so that's okay. So like,
you got to put the wink emoji.
So like if you go with racist slurs or.
Wink emoji, you know, it's
okay.
All good. It's all good.
It's okay.
On air show meeting,
yes.
I just got an email from TV. They're going to come to you early for weather. So just keep it timely. Keep it timely there, Chadwick.
Okay.
Are they coming to us now?
I don't think this early.
No, not this early.
Okay.
No.
All right. Well, let's get to Adam on a busy afternoon once again, and we'll get back to various other things. We spent quite a bit of time yesterday, for all the obvious reasons, talking about the shooting and the death of Justine Dumont. We're going to do that again. We've got a good guest, Dr. Philip Stinson, who's a criminologist at Bowling Green, former police officer. Lindsay's had him on before. Very, very good guest. He's going to join us later. Major Garrett is going to join us at 12:35 on the health care bill. At the moment, done, but certainly the effort is not done. And we're working on a couple other ideas. Can I just ask a quick just procedural idea? So Justine and Don were about to be married. Don's last name is DeMond. We just heard Steve talking about her father's last name. R-U-S-Z-C-Z-Y-K. Ruziska? What do you think it is? So why aren't we calling her that?
I asked that yesterday, and I forget what the explanation was, but she had already taken his name.
She had already taken the name on her
own. It was just kind of like they had been together for a while, and the wedding seemed more procedural.
Okay.
And she had gone with his last name.
Are a lot of people doing that if they've been together for a while? I mean, it wouldn't surprise me. I'm not aware of it that much.
I feel like when it comes to marriage, we're making strides. You know, I know couples who take last names but aren't married, but they live together, and it just makes things easier.
Sure.
If you're sharing bills or you're...
You know, I mean, even when people get divorced, a lot of people might think they're going to change names, but then you're changing your name back to maybe your maiden name, but your kids have a different name. And that situation. I just was wondering, you know.
Yeah, no, really early on, because there was some confusion about that, I believe it was a family friend just kind of cleared the air and said she took the name early. They're not legally married, but.
Got it. Dan, if you could just pop me up a smidge too, that would be great. Appreciate it. Adam, what stands out most to you since we last were on the air at 3 o'clock? What new information do we have? We know a little bit more about the officer, right? But nothing really stands out that much. You led up to the brief statement from Don. You know, Mayor Hodges was with us yesterday, and I asked a lot of questions. I don't know how direct she was. I, again, appreciate her coming on. I saw her again this morning on Good Morning America, some of the same type of questions, nothing new. Do you sense we've had a big turn in information? You're hearing from more of her family and friends about the quality of person she was and how devastated and the life she had led, But there's not a lot different, right?
No. The only thing, and this is just personally observational from my standpoint, is that I texted you about this last night. It's very unusual to me that this officer has this attorney, and this attorney releasing a statement saying that the officer feels for the family. That is very unusual from my standpoint, especially in a big department like Minneapolis, where you've got a police union, and the union often is the one that will protect these officers,
right?
Provide them with an attorney, kind of close ranks around this officer, and at least from the outside, that does not seem to be happening here.
Do we know if this particular attorney has work with the Minneapolis Police Department before?
I mean, he may be someone who's worked with the police union before, and the police union may have provided this attorney. We don't know that, but
I'm not.
I haven't heard one word from the police union, unless I'm missing.
Well,
something.
There was something from Bob Kroll, and it was, I think it was like a no comment. It was in the Trib story here. The attorney might be fantastic. I'm just not familiar with him. Did the name ring a bell with you?
No.
The attorney?
Thomas Plunkett.
Bob Kroll said they are waiting for the Bureau of Criminal Apprehension to complete its investigation, right? So, no comment. I was reminded in talking to someone last night who's followed this closely, and also the Trib had it, that KSTP had a report earlier on the body camera situation where there had been some concern or some debate. Were the officers using the body cameras enough even before this, right? So when we have this conversation, we had it a lot yesterday on should these body cameras, should they have automatically been on, right, once they arrive at the scene? And then we went through the criteria. But it is interesting that there was at least some conversation within some people either overseeing this, some politicians, maybe even some divide within the police force about the body cameras. But on new information, there really isn't a lot. That's why I think Dr. Stinson is a good guest for later in the show. Someone who's a former officer himself, criminologist, who's looked at a lot of cases like this early on when you don't have a lot of the answers. Back in moments here on WCCO. Adam, you were at the big match at Target Field last night. Is that correct?
I was. Beautiful night. A little muggy, a little steamy.
Yeah. Give us some observations. Is this what appearance is this for you at Target Field this year? Is this number two?
Oh no, I think I've gone to. I think it might have been my third game.
And at any point, Derek Falvey or Thad Levine reached out to you about maybe trying out of the bullpen. No. I mean, they're up to like 28, 29 pitchers. They were very good last night, but. I mean, I've seen you throw, and you fit in with the rest of that bullpen. I got to be honest.
I can pitch the contact.
You can pitch the contact. You're not as good if there's a lake you need to throw it into, but
right.
it's very different when you're pitching from 60 feet, 6 inches. So you purchase tickets a little bit ahead. It's the Yankees, right? Yep. The ball clubs in the – we can't say the throws of the race right now because it's July 17th. But
still relevant.
They're very relevant. Yep. You paid very reasonable price.
Yeah,
for the,
I love those. I used to, I think it was like the second season, I went in on a 40-game pack with like four other guys. La-di-da.
Well, la-di-da.
You know, the big money. But that, we were in that section, 126, which is down the left field line.
Oh, of course.
Well, la-di-da.
But it's, I love that section.
That is a good one.
We had row two.
So this is kind of third basis. And you got the great view of downtown.
Great view of downtown. And, I mean, the left fielder literally is, you know, 30 yards away from you.
Mm-hmm. It was DiMaggio last night, too.
It was incredible. Kinda,
I don't know why this story is not getting more play. I just don't understand.
Yeah. But, yeah, it was, and there was enough of a breeze to kind of keep it cool. But right before the storm hit, so like the sixth or seventh inning,
yeah, this is good.
The wind picked up from left field and it just suddenly. It was raining napkins, those brown napkins from left field.
Maybe Mike Lynch can work this in. Could you? You know, you
people were booing like somebody deliberately threw them, but no, this is clearly the wind because I looked up there and it was that middle section.
Yeah,
there was a woman coming down the aisle.
The villainous wiener man had thrown
her hair was just straight forward, so that wind was just howling through there.
Yeah,
but the ball boy on the left, you know, they had a break in the inning. He went and picked up like four napkins and then went back. And everybody's like, hey, there's a few more out
there. How many more were out there?
Oh, there was at least 30 or 40 napkins.
And it just, did he feel like he was just checking it off?
Then there was a big plastic bag at one moment tumbling through.
Yeah.
But the grounds crew came then and removed all the napkins.
Yeah.
Great. And,
but you also told me then the left fielder comes out there and he's kind of looking around like, what's going on?
He was having fun with it.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was a great night and Twins get the win.
27,000, they announced.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, it's July 17th. They have exceeded expectations significantly so far, right? They're in the race. The Yankees, this is not Derek Jeter. This is not A-Rod. This is not Ruth and Gehrig. But the new darling of baseball is here.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's the persona of the Yankees.
Right.
If I'm the Twins, I'm not happy.
I'm not happy either. First game, first home game since the All-Star break.
Yep.
A Monday night.
Yep.
Decent weather. I'm a little warm, but.
It's a little warm, but it's still, July.
Exactly. Yeah, that's. I was surprised. I would think that. Because the Yankees travel so well, too. I
mean, yes.
There's Yankee fans everywhere.
Well, obviously. To me, you're saying then without the Yankees, you're at 21,000, 22,000.
Yeah.
Right? What would your multiplier be, Dan? Just the automatic of the Yankees. If they get 27, and who knows, because all of them in town are capable of lying.
Chicanery?
Yes. What do you think the multiplier is? Just the allure of the Yankees and Judge, right?
Yeah, and especially Judge, I think. You're pretty close. I might go a little lower than 21.
Yeah.
You know, had they not had the Yankees in town, if it was Baltimore or pick some other you know, team that people don't care that much about.
So, but if you're the Twins, I mean, not publicly, but behind the scenes, don't you think they're saying, we can't get to at least 30 at this point of summer and when we've showed to be a representative team?
Sure. You know, two things. One, you know, look inward before you start pointing fingers, right? Because, A, you stunk at home.
No doubt.
You have one of the, I think, like the third worst home record in all of baseball.
Which is bizarre.
Which is absolutely bizarre. So you stunk at home and, you know, people aren't buying into this team. They're not really believing that this team is legit. Their record and their performance says they are, but given the past 6 years, they're not buying in, and they're going to have to see some sustained success before they're going to come back.
I think that's a very good point, Adam. When you're miserable outside of the 1 year, it does take Minnesotans a while to come back, unless it's just like something electric is taking place, a moss-like figure arrives or something dramatic, because the ballpark is still a great draw. It's still a great place. They, I mean, if you're telling me, because the Wolves made some news yesterday with the Target Center renovation, and I actually think it looks better than I expected, because I was skeptical of this. I've just watched three or four other arenas and the renovation the first year or two, and then you're like, no, you're too far behind. So I'll be curious to see it. But to me, if you're saying which is the best venue in town, and it is, it's unbelievably competitive now, considering you have a stadium in your backyard. We all have stadiums now.
Right.
Target Field's still my number one.
It is. Oh, yeah. I think so, too. I mean, U.S. Bank Stadium is jaw-dropping and like, wow, this is, but still, I mean, Target Field.
And by the way, the X, it's when you walk in the X, it still seems to me like it's 3-4 years old. Mm-hmm. So, to their credit. But, I mean, come on. I mean, that's a, they should be down, and it is patience and how much longer are you going to wait? I think they've made their decision. I think the public has made their decision, whether it's a combination of all the things we've said, we're not buying in yet. You know, we've seen the ballpark. And who's the crowd that isn't? What's your guess, Lynn? Is the crowd that's not quite jumping on board, so they have 35,000, is it the party crowd? Is it more the hardcore baseball crowd? Who are the folks who are not coming back as much as the Twins would like to? Because for me, 27,000 Yankees is disappointing.
I would say it's some of the people who the allure is lost. The new shiny toy in town. The people, whether they're hardcore baseball fans or they're people who have just been to Target Field a lot. You know, I know people who may watch baseball on TV, but have never been to Target Field because it's not on their list of priorities. You know, there are people who maybe spend their money elsewhere, or I wouldn't necessarily say can't afford it, but like just been to the ballpark until last year. We took them for the first time.
Now, that's true. I don't doubt that. But until about 2014, they still were getting big. They were getting bigger crowds than getting now. So some of that crowd is not coming back. So the folks who haven't gone before, they're out. I'm saying of the crowd that was there before, who isn't coming back?
What about families?
I've heard a lot of people say it's just too expensive. If it's you
get a 7 o'clock
your significant
game,
other, two kids.
And these games routinely go over 3 hours.
That's
so you're
true.
After 10 o'clock.
You're right, expensive. But again, some of these families were going. And it might be the list that Lindsay was alluding to. They've seen it now. So they saw it. But here's what I would say. If next year at this time, they're in first place, and instead of being like 1 to 3 games above 500, and they're 15-plus games above 500, and they get the Yankees, don't you think they're going to get 35, 36,000? Because I do.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe I'm wrong. Maybe this is more of what the Twins have to accept for a good crowd, 27 to 30,000.
It's not unique to Minnesota, is it? I mean, isn't it?
I don't know. There's a lot of places that are drawing really well. I mean, baseball attendance, we can talk about the length of games, and for me, they're interminable. But there are a lot of places around the country that are drawing very, very well.
And let's be honest, downtown with the construction and the traffic is a disaster.
Does
right
not
now.
Help, yeah.
And it does not help to think, you know, if you're traveling from either side of the metro, you have to get down here or you have to go through the tunnel, which is just a mess.
Good luck to you, right?
Yeah.
Let me talk about Harry's, this great razor that I use every day I shave. On board since early 2016, I am with 3 million men who have made the switch to Harry's. For me, simply put, it's the best razor I've ever used. I love that two guys started this company. I love that they own the factory. I love that it's a little bit cheaper. I love that it's delivered right to you. I love that there's a 100% satisfaction guaranteed or your money back. So they believe in their product so much, and they should. They are still continuing to offer you this free trial set only if you listen to this show and go to harrys.com/Hartman. What do you get? The razor handle, the razor itself, the five precision engine blades, lubricating strip and trimmer blade, the rich lathering shave gel, the travel blade cover. How much you paying? Well, I said free, so you're paying a couple bucks for shipping. That's it. Don't wait. Do it now. harrys.com/Hartman. He is one of our favorites. Man of many talents, including his podcast. And I want to start right there. Major Garrett, kind enough to join us. How is the podcast faring so far?
It's doing really well. We have a podcast audience every week of between 50 and 60,000 downloads. We are on CBSN, our digital platform, four times on the weekends, twice on Friday and twice on Saturday. To make it easy, 9 p.m. Eastern and Pacific time. That audience ranges anywhere from 250 to 300,000. So
nice.
For a podcast that has basically my Twitter feed to promote itself, we're doing okay.
For the folks who have not heard it, and a lot of people have heard it, even when I said you were coming on, said, make sure Major knows we really enjoy the podcast. What's the best way to describe it?
The podcast is a way to learn about Washington gradually from different voices, Republican, Democrat, liberal, conservative, and learn why people are involved in politics. If there's anything I want to accomplish with the podcast, it's to allow people to listen in a long-form way to why people actually work here and get beyond the assumption that everyone comes to Washington to destroy America, which has sort of been the dialogue for the last 20 years. Both parties engage in it.
Yep.
It's not true. It's simply not true. Lots of really smart, energetic, courageous, and patriotic people come to Washington to try to make the place a better place, to make the country better. And they have their own philosophy and their own point of view in trying to accomplish it. And we talk to people who are involved in politics, either at the grassroots level or lawmakers or somewhere in between. And one of the things that our audience has sort of caught on to is you can learn something, even though you're not necessarily always going to hear someone from your particular political point of view. And that's part of what the show is about. It's not right. It's not left. It's not center. It's just what I hope is an engaging conversation about people who are actually involved in the work of politics. And we also have some fun. It's
yes.
not all heavyweight stuff. It's not all heavy doses of issues and politics. We also find out what makes these people tick in their real lives, what kind of music they like, movies, what books have been influential. And so we smatter through our conversation things that most everyone can relate to. And the other hook of the show is, unlike most other political podcasts that are done in a silent studio and kind of have a intensity or interview quality around it, we have a meal in a restaurant. And we talk during the course of the meal. We order during the meal. We eat during the meal. You can hear me chomping away, and that may or may not be entertaining.
What if the service is not good? Are you willing to?
It's always been good because one of the things is restaurants line up to host our podcast. So they're geeked up to have us come in. It's a little free publicity for them, and they sort of put on their best performance. So
are you paying for lunch?
Pardon? Yes, we always pay for it. Yes, yeah. we never get a free lunch. No, we pay for everything.
Are you a good tipper?
We are a good tipper. Yes, Takeout Podcast is a very good tipper, and that's why restaurants are lining up. And the most important thing about it, and it's really my only good idea ever, possibly. Everyone who comes on figures out that when you sit down and have a meal, you're no longer that intense.
Yeah.
Humanoid in
for
politics
sure.
that you most always are. You come down two or three notches. And I've had chiefs of staff and communications directors from very powerful politicians say to me after the show, I've never seen X or Y that relaxed. That's a completely different kind of conversation. Well, that's one of the things we're trying to achieve.
The Takeout, it's well worth listening to, and I appreciate, as always, you coming on. Let's talk about what has taken place here over a long period of time. We certainly all know that even in the lead-up to the passing of Obamacare, that the Republicans were opposed, and many, many times on the House side, they voted for the repeal and the replacement, even voted for the repeal, and that every GOP candidate for the presidency said this would be a signature part, including the victor, President Trump. There are many different approaches that presidents have taken throughout the history of our country. As far as I'm very involved, I know all the details of the bill, I want to be in the negotiations, others want to oversee it. Clearly, the president's approach on policy, on wonkish matters when he was running and early on to us from afar doesn't seem like he delves into this. He clearly did in New York. He clearly did in real estate. He wrote about negotiations forever, and a lot of that success, Major, happened because he knew those deals inside and out. He did not do this, by all accounts, including your reporting. How much did that hurt the potential passage of this bill, his approach to it?
You know, I really do think the failure of the repeal and replace efforts have about 30% to do with President Trump and about 60% to 70% due to the persistent congressional Republican failure to actually understand the burdens of dealing with this issue as a majority party with a sympathetic president. I place most of the blame on congressional Republicans for this because long before Donald Trump was a candidate, they told the country they knew how to make health care better, they knew how to replace the Affordable Care Act, and they were not only willing to do it, but proving with all sorts of show votes, and that's all they were, show
yep.
votes.
Yep.
They knew President Obama would never sign anything, making their case that they were so committed to it, that's why they're having so many of these votes. And then when the time actually came with a president who would sign this legislation, first in the House and now in the Senate, they didn't have anywhere near the understanding internally of what it would take and what the actual real-life politics was for themselves, okay? You can tell the country something over and over and over, as they have on repealing the Affordable Care Act, but telling the country that doesn't make it so when faced with the reality of your promises you don't deliver. President Trump is president. He set this in motion. He decided to go with health care first before infrastructure and tax reform. I guarantee you that is already something that this White House regrets, and it will regret that decision more and more with each and every passing week. That's the one thing I lay at the president's feet. Everything else I essentially put in the responsible, or some might say now irresponsible, hands of House and Senate Republicans. It was their burden. They always knew it was their burden because it was their promise. And as you know, Chad, I wrote a book about the 1994 midterm election,
yep.
the rise of the Gingrich Revolution.
Mm-hmm.
And I wrote that book 10 years after the fact to make one point, which has only been become more important since I wrote the book, which is this. What was important about that election was not just a change in power, but that the minority party not only asked for power, everyone asked for power, but the minority party at that particular moment in history prepared for power should it be given to it. And everything that was in the contract with America was not only a bullet point and easily digestible and in TV guide, but behind it was a piece of legislation that not only had been drafted completely, but that everyone who signed on to the contract with America was promising to vote for that piece of legislation and nothing else. So all of the politics, legislative and macro, meaning what you tell the country, had already been adjudicated. Republicans on the replacement of the Affordable Care Act never did that hard work. And the proof of that is the ruins of their repeal efforts to date.
So the president has been saying for a period of time, picking up on some other senators, Ben Sasse, among others, that let's repeal it and let's replace it later. Mitch McConnell, 2 weeks ago, scoffed at that idea. Then last night, he talked about that idea, but already today, multiple GOP senators said that's out. So now the president, in the last hour or so, has said back to another idea he's mentioned many times, Major, let's let Obamacare fail on its own, and then the Democrats will come back to us. How would that play out? Can the president of the United States literally look at not making adjustments, and state after state is facing serious issues? So now you're dealing with potentially millions of Americans, and the president is just going to say, I'm not going to step in. I'm not going to make any accommodations. I need this to completely implode, and then I will have the Democrats in a better position, and then I will negotiate.
Right. Then that becomes part of his ownership. And if he makes that decision to say, look, we're just going to let this take its course. Now, one of the things that has created the instability in the market the last 6 months is the insurance company's anticipation of a repeal and replace and trying to position itself. If that's all taken off the table, they may reengage in the marketplace in a different way. If they are assuming that the Affordable Care Act is going to be around for some period of time, they may reengage in the marketplace, not anticipating its end, as they were more or less telling themselves was likely and preparing themselves for the last 6 months. That's one of the problems with this entire arrangement. You tell the insurance companies you're going to kill the Affordable Care Act. What are they going to do? Yeah. They're going to begin to prepare something that doesn't exist anymore.
Yeah.
So they're going to back away. They're not going to try to work the system. So that's point one. But we're not even there yet. The White House does not have a strategy right now. It simply doesn't. The White House this morning, as I said on CBSN at 9 o'clock this morning, was telling itself a reassuring bedtime story last night. Hey, the last time the Senate voted on this was 2015, and 49 of the senators that are in the Republican conference now voted to repeal the Affordable Care Act. And we've got Senator from Alabama, Luther Strange, he's going to vote for it. And Todd Young was in the House from Indiana. He's a senator now. He'll vote for it. So we've got 51 votes. They don't have 51 votes. You know why? Because when they voted the last time in 2015, President Obama was going to veto it, and everybody knew it.
It was meaningless.
Was it a show vote? Guess what, ladies and gentlemen? 100%. It was a show vote.
Yep.
They didn't mean it.
Mm-hmm.
And this is where the rubber is going to hit the road, Chad, when it comes to the politics of this. Because I can't tell you how many grassroots Republican activists have said to me the following. This is an existential moment for the Republican Party. You tell us for 7 years and three election cycles that you are bound and determined to do this one thing, and then you can't or won't do it or won't or can't or whatever it is. What is it about your party and what is it about your ideology and approach to government that we should ever believe in again? That's where they found themselves.
So let me ask this. Major Gehr with us for about another 2 minutes. Are the Democrats prepared to come up with specific policy points on their own, as opposed to just saying we are not the party of Donald Trump?
Well, there's going to have to be more humiliation and more acts of contrition and more mea culpas from Republicans before Democrats will do that. But interestingly, and it's an important thing you just asked, Chad, because last week something important in this context happened. To make the bill more palatable, meaning to have more money available for Medicaid and opioid crisis, Senate Republicans said they would accept the maintenance, meaning the continuation of the three largest tax increases in the Affordable Care Act, all focused on high-income Americans and CEOs of insurance companies. They're accepting all three of the taxes, okay? Now, that's one of the reasons some people like Mike Lee ultimately backed off.
Yeah, didn't go far enough.
Because that's not repealing the Affordable Care Act. Hello, if you keep the three biggest taxes,
right,
you're not repealing it. But to have that be something that the White House was more or less willing to live with creates an opening. But it's a slender and thin opening. And a lot more contrition is going to have to be shown by Republicans. They're going to have to act and talk much more desperately than they are now before Democrats are going to engage.
Last thing, about 45 seconds. On your trip, when you were working 23 hours of the day, when you found the president through Europe, you must have had an hour to sample something interesting on the landscape. Did anything stand out?
Oh, I had one very lovely meal in Hamburg, a spectacular plate of schnitzel, and several delicious beers to go along with it. That was my one and only night out. It was about two precious hours, and it was a authentic and delightful German experience, and I'm very happy about it.
Always appreciate it, sir. We'll talk soon.
Chad, thank you.
Major Garrett, on a very busy day, always check out the podcast, too. It's a great listen, The Takeout. It is on 1252. That is your Lindis Construction Time Check. Time to upgrade your windows with Season Guard. I do think, and Adam, you might have heard some of the major conversation, when we look at this on healthcare, how much of this is on Trump versus how much is on the folks in Congress. And I think, Major, that's a pretty good percentage, 30-70, right? Because well before Donald Trump was a possibility, this was coming up over and over and over again. And that's not to say all congressmen are the same from maybe 2012 or all senators. But the idea that you weren't over and over again saying we're going to build up more votes in 2014, or most importantly, if we win in 2016, fill in the blank. It's Rand Paul. It's, you know, it's anybody. It's Jeb Bush. You name it. We're ready to go. Does it help when a president is more involved? Yeah. But it wasn't like Barack Obama was over there every day. He was criticized by that. Reagan certainly wasn't. So some people have had success the other way. They're up against the wall, though, right now, no doubt.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.